Fortune
and Maya Show, coming to you January 17, 2007, for a special WBAI Undrive program. Good afternoon. Ralph is here beside me, and we're broadcasting to you by telephone today from Vallejo, California. We're glad to be with all of you in the tri-state region of New York, and those of you listening via the internet, WBAI's site, www.wbai.org, throughout the world. Today we have a very special program. We're going to play an excerpt, a very exciting excerpt that's relevant to what's happening today in the Middle East and continuing our discussion of the impending attack on Iran and the U.S. designs for the Middle East, particularly breaking up the countries and seizing the resources. And this is an excerpt from the two-part DVD, Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East, which was a lecture that Ralph and I gave in Berkeley, California last summer. This DVD presentation, two DVD, high quality, was part of the WBAI fund drive, the last fund drive. And I'd like to say to those of you who so generously contributed to WBAI that there were technical difficulties and your premiums are being duplicated as we speak and will be sent out to you in the next days. Those of you who know about this incredible DVD will want to contribute for another copy to share with your friends and your family and your colleagues. And those of you who hadn't, who missed out on that opportunity, now is the time to step forward. Today we're on for 1 hour from 5 to 6. Get out your notepad and note down when we're going to be on over the next few weeks. Next week we have a 2-hour special. We'll be coming on at 4 o'clock and we'll be broadcasting from 4 to 6. The week after, from 5 to 6, our regular time, and the last week of the fund drive we won't be on. And then the week after, we'll be back with you for regular programming. Again, this is Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East. It's a two-part DVD for your generous contribution of $125 to WBAI. Remember, WBAI is your station, and we come to you each and every week, 52 weeks a year, thanks to your contributions. Ralph?
Well, my Apocalypse Now basically provides a historic and contemporary critique of the underlying politics of the strategy for seizing resources throughout the region of the Middle East and of West Asian continental mass. Plans that have been on the drawing board for every administration since 1964. And, of course, we are now seeing the implementation on four fronts, not just Iraq, which is in a process of being escalated, but also in Afghanistan and pending in Iran and in Somalia, with Syria shortly to be included in this target of opportunity for a ruling class that is absolutely addicted to military production and to permanent war.
And, Ralph, that is no more clear than in the article that you handed me from January 11th, 2007, MSNBC.com. Pentagon wants 92,000 more troops. The goal may cost $1.2 billion a year. 92,000. Up the Army, up the Marine Corps, 92,000. President Bush has already announced that despite the will of the American people, he is going to send 22,000 of these troops to Iraq. And we'll be discussing this and more when we come back after this about 25-minute excerpt from Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East. And, Michael, if you could come in and remind me again of the telephone number to call. We have people in the pledge room, 212-209-2950. I believe is the correct number. You
are correct, Maya. You don't need any reminding. You and Ralph know that number very, very well. That is the number indeed. And we thank you so very much for joining us here on WBAI, as you do every Tuesday evening of the Fun Drives. We appreciate your participation and what you offer to our listeners here during these Fun Drives, and each and every week as you do programming for us on WBAI, your presentation of Taking Aim. So thank you so very much.
So get on your phone, 212-209-2950. And in the coming days, those of you who are listening from other countries, you'll have an opportunity for contributing on the Internet. But that's not available yet, so please, 212-209-2950, get on the phone while we're playing the excerpt, and the more calls, the more time we'll have to discuss with you. Remember, we're only on for 1 hour today, so between 5 and 6 is your opportunity for Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East. This is a very exciting excerpt. Michael?
In 1979... a document was prepared in the councils of the Mossad. It would later be published under the name of Oded Yinon. It was released widely in 1982. It was called A Strategy for the 1980s. And it called for the dismantling of each Middle Eastern country in its turn into its ethnic and religious components. What Abba Iban had called the millet system of the Ottoman Empire. The document would become a central organizing instrument within the United States of a major sector of the ruling class, which contemplated the necessity to redraw the map of the Middle East. And it envisaged, first of all, dismantling Iraq, dividing it into Kurdish, Shia, and Sunni areas, doing the same in Syria, Alawite and Sunni and Kurd, again the same in Iran. Saudi Arabia was to be dismantled, Egypt as well, a Copt state in Egypt, an upper and lower Nile state. An entire and elaborated plan that was to become a main strategic perspective for the ruling class in the United States. It's been ascribed to what are called the neocons, or a sector of the rulers that are affiliated with the Likud wing of the Zionist movement, but it goes far deeper than that. Every major sector of the ruling class and of both parties has embraced this design from its inception. In fact, every administration since 1964 has prepared for the direct seizure of Arab resources. Robert Tucker, reflecting the U.S. Pentagon plans, wrote Oil, the Issue of American Intervention, in January 1975 in commentary. Without intervention, there is the distinct possibility of an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to that of the 1930s. Now, Tucker identified the area that was targeted, the Arab shoreline of the Gulf, a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. And interestingly enough, a figure named Miles Ignotis, who is in fact Edward Luttwak, Defense Intelligence Agency analyst, had put it very clearly in a piece at that time called Seizing Arab Oil. He was a consultant with the Pentagon. And he put forward a blueprint for what would become Operation Desert Shield. We are developing rapid deployment and strikes forces, the 82nd Airborne Division, strengthened by air cavalry battalions, will embark on giant C-5 and C-141 jet transports, refuel at Israeli bases, proceed to drop paratroopers at key Saudi oil fields, installations, and airports. Escort will be provided by Phantom fighters based on Israeli fields and aboard carriers in the Arabian Sea. The airborne division will pave the way for large marine contingents who arrive on the scene exactly 72 hours later. The U.S. National Security Council compiled a top-secret Department of Defense plan. The plan, codenamed Dahran Option 4, drawn up by the Pentagon, provided for the attacks on the oil field of Ghawar, containing 40% of the known reserves at the time. In August 1975, oil fields as military objectives, a feasibility study published and prepared by Colonel John Collins for the Pentagon, targeted each country in its turn for dismantling and for occupation. In June 1978, June 4th, Admiral Thomas Moore, chairperson of the Joint Chiefs of Staff from 1970 to 74, called for the deployment of carrier forces to the Eastern African littoral and Arabian Sea, preparing for an attack on the Gulf. In the 1978 corresponding study by the Brookings Institute, with a detailed analysis, the program was put on a timetable. By 1979, Lawrence Moshe was outlining what he called, what military people call, the 100,000-man quick strike force consisting of divisions that will be deployable anywhere by air. But we need a real boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we can talk of using the strike force. And it may turn out that that boogeyman will not be defined the same in Arabic as in English. Every administration, non-stop, from 64 to the present day, had prepared for the strategic operation of dismantling the existing country-selling regimes, their own clients in the Arab East. And in many respects, it is an expression of the crisis of the ruling class and of capital. Rumsfeld put it very clearly a few weeks ago with respect to his defense of their operations in Iraq. He said, you know, in 1940, he said, we had only 200,000 men under arms, and they were practicing with wooden rifles. He says, think how far we've come since then. Well, yes. In 1938, look at the book by Robert McIlvaine on the Great Depression. In 1938, the depression that unfolded dwarfed that of 1929. 17 million unemployed. The New Deal had never, in any remote sense, addressed the crisis of 1929. The percentages of the unemployed in 38 exceeded those of 29 and 30. So what did they do? Within something like a year and three quarters, the population that was unemployed was now employed with the merchants of death. The pump priming mechanisms of Keynes were applied to the dependence of capital on military outlay. Over a space of 40 years, $10 trillion, which is more than the combined value of everything produced in this country. Capitalism, addictive to arms production like an addict needs his fix in an ever-increasing dosis. The process that is unfolding now in the destruction of Lebanon, yet again, is a little continuation of this policy and of this dependence, which embraces all sectors of the class. They are divided only by their conception of tactical appropriateness, a sector of capital that prefers, as did the epigons of Eastern Capital, Brzezinski and Scowcroft, Bush Sr., Clinton, they preferred the blockade of Iraq with 1.6 million civilian deaths, 700,000 children, death squads, assassination units, coup d'etat and putches to the specific and direct military occupation of the moment. But those divisions do not preclude the embrace of every adventure that is undertaken by the military and its supporters and its directors in the ruling class. In the current course of the destruction of Lebanon, Israel's Netanyahu declared that a buffer zone cannot be enough, and the UPI reported that the Israeli army intends to go beyond the Litani River. Well, of course, Netanyahu is an interesting figure in this regard. As Gordon Nevy reported in the Israeli publication Hayir, Benjamin Netanyahu in the United States had four social security numbers. Benjamin Netanyahu, who worked for the Central Intelligence Agency as John L. Sullivan, John L. Sullivan Jr., Benjamin Netai, and Benjamin Netanyahu, prepared a series of conferences on the menace of terror, the category of terror. They were organized in Tel Aviv. They were organized in Washington. They embraced George Bush Sr., George Shultz, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the heads of the intelligence agencies, the National Security Council. It was the category of terror that was invariably deployed by the Zionists in the process of the destruction of the Palestinian people and in their predations on each subsequent Arab country whose territory was to be taken and its area emptied of population yet again. And the category of terror became the ideological replacement for that former rationale for the addiction to arms, namely the menace of communist subversion. That infinitely conservative Stalinist bureaucracy presented as a revolutionary force in the world when its entire thrust was to create sphere of influence deals with capital across the planet, and with its collapse, the category of terror, the integument and replacement for the predations of capital and its dependence upon arms production and for its adventures abroad. The ultimate conspiracy theory, a handful of Central Intelligence Agency-funded operatives, more menacing than 50,000 hydrogen bomb missiles, more dangerous than the Soviet Union, it's Osama bin Laden from his cave in Afghanistan. As the false flag operations which have characterized every principal imperial adventure in the history of U.S. class rule was unfolding. Now under the rubric of a defense against terror attacks that were in fact organized, coordinated, implemented, and imposed by the ruling class itself. That's an old story. I mean, we know with the operations of 1962 and Operation Northwood, as James Bamford would disclose them, that in the Joint Chiefs of Staff and in the National Security Council, a plan was devised to have airplanes crash into buildings, to assassinate U.S. citizens in Miami and Washington, to anticipating the downing of the rocket carrying John Glenn astronaut, and that to be all imputed to Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution as a casus belli. Every imperial adventure is preceded on that basis. And the Mossad has been the instrument through which the intelligence agency imposed the destruction of the World Trade Center in 1993. All that we see unfolding now in Lebanon with the devastation and the destruction, the anticipated crushing of the population, which has not occurred, was preparatory to the plans to attack Iran and to implement what has been called World War IV, not only by James Woolsey, the former head of the CIA, and not only by the Project for the New American Century and the American Enterprise Institute, not only by Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz and Libby and those who are associated with the so-called neocons. But the entire ruling class has embraced this design. One of the leitmotifs about the destruction of Lebanon that has emerged has been the attack on the town of Qana, as you will recall, And it was, again, based upon the claim that Hezbollah rockets were fired from Qana. Well, in fact, as the Jerusalem Post had to acknowledge, there were no rockets fired from Qana. And the IDF responded to this by the following. It's just a bunch of dead Arabs, was the IDF officer's response, as Haaretz reported it. James Bovard published this on July 30th. Just a bunch of dead Arabs. The destruction of 60 people in Qana, the burying alive of 37 children, occurred on the anniversary, the 10th anniversary of the destruction of Qana in 1996, when 137 civilians were buried, killed, destroyed in the same type of operation. There was a UN investigation into Israel's war crimes at Qana. The detailed reports by Robert Fisk at the time of the massacre of Qana, with the evidence from the eyewitnesses of the drones targeting the city and the town, is part of the process through which the population was marked for devastation and destruction. It's precisely how Iraq has been targeted from Fallujah to Haditha. It's the methods through which the imperialists and the Zionists proceed and impose their plans. The Haaretz report as to what was intended in Lebanon, there will be no limitations. The entire civilian infrastructure will be removed. Now, what's interesting about this particular report in Haaretz on August 7th, which had present not only Defense Minister Amir Peretz and Ministers Eli Yishai and Chief of Staff Dan Halutz, but also participating in that declaration was Rafi Eitan. Now, Rafi Eitan is an interesting figure. Do you recall the hijacking of the Achille Lauro, which was attributed to a wing of the PLO at the time when a pleasure ship was seized and a elderly Jewish tourist named Leon Klinghoffer in his wheelchair was thrown overboard and all of that ascribed to the Palestine Liberation Organization. In fact, as Ari Ben Menashe has documented in Prophets of War, that was a Mossad operation of Rafi Eitan. Rafi Eitan is the Israeli intelligence commander who ran Jonathan Pollard. And it's interesting because when he was confronted by the fact that Pollard had been captured, he told Pollard's wife, had he come to the embassy, I would have solved the problem. I would have shot him between the eyes. There'd be no Jonathan Pollard scandal then, he said to the astonished wife. Yeah, he said, if he presented himself in my hands, he said, you wouldn't be hearing about him now. The ideology of the Zionist state is hard really to comprehend at certain points in time. It's as if you were reading some anti-Semitic site. Here is Yedio Aharonot, which describes how it is a duty to kill civilians. This is the proclamation of Yesha, which is the convocation of rabbis representing an interpretation of the Talmud and Torah, in which they state that it is it's a mitzvah or a blessing to eliminate and to murder and to kill civilians, and that any inhibition of this process weakens the fighting spirit of the IDF. The entire Orthodox Rabbi Council in Israel and the West Bank embraced this position. It was reported in Haaretz and Yedioth Ahronot. This is why Yeshua Leibovitz, the leading theologian in Israel, had designated the Zionists as Judeo-Nazis, because they are not even disguising the genocidal intent with which they approach their target populations. Israel will hit 10 multi-story buildings for every rocket fired Agence France-Presse, quotes Army Chief of Staff Dan Halutz. Maya has described the white phosphorus. You saw photographs of white phosphorus. White phosphorus cannot be extinguished with water. It eats directly into the bone and flesh. Water accelerates that process. White phosphorus is the standard operational content of the bombs that have been dropped throughout the Lebanese south. The cluster bombs consist of thousands of tiny BBs that render kidneys and livers like a perforated like a sieve. The other component of phosphorus bombs, tiny slivers of razor-sharp steel slice like a machete. The cluster bombs that have been dropped throughout Lebanon and in the villages and in the towns are large numbers of them disguised as telephones and as toys, brightly colored, yellow and red and green. We have many of them as samples. The Lebanese Red Cross, the Palestinian Red Crescent Society has gathered them in their hundreds. They have one purpose only, which is to attract children, to attract villagers, to attract people who are curious about them and pick them up. The operation that unfolds is by its very essence one of destruction and of targeting of the entire populations of these victim and target countries. Now, I referenced the role of Benjamin Netanyahu and the formation of what was called the Category of Terror as the rationale for the unfolding Israeli and U.S. design throughout the Arab East. On this basis, they will not merely continue with these attacks, but they will stage other operations, as we see most recently with the farcical plot in London, following on the one in Miami, where the Federal Bureau of Investigation was the promulgator of the entire event and promoter of every piece of evidence that was adduced. Following that in Toronto, where the Royal Canadian Mounted Police was the provider of all of the putative explosives, all of the plans. The youngsters who have been rounded up in regard to these things have not even a vanishing relation to the events that are ascribed to them. There isn't a scintilla of evidence. With respect to the youth from ages 14 and 17, and one person as old as 35 in London, they are held incommunicado. They're not allowed to see lawyers. They're not allowed to see their families. The Bank of England has seized their funds. There's no evidence that's been produced. They've not even been charged formally. And on that basis, by the way, the British practice of eliminating habeas corpus and of detaining people first for 28 days is now to be replaced by 90-day detention without charge, without recourse to attorneys, without contact with families. And all of the family members of those who have been arrested and detained in Great Britain have been forcibly removed from their homes, and their homes have been seized and everything in them confiscated while these people have been sent to hotels or relatives. Nobody's been charged. A nary voice amongst the leaders of the Republican and the Democratic Party. So the war on terror is a war against the populations of the metropolitan countries themselves. The war on terror is a war against our working population. The war on terror is the rubric and rationale for the eight-hour day being a thing of the past. For eight-hour day joining with the health care and pension plans as something of distant memory, for the gains of 100 years being wiped off the map, for the largest form of employment being part-time work in the United States. No contract, no security, no pension, no retirement plan, no health care. The largest form of employment, that of part-time work. All of that proceeds under the rationale of the trillions that are allocated for the wars of predation. And in that regard, as you may recall, on the eve of September 11th, CBS News and Dan Rather announced that $2.3 trillion had disappeared from the coffers of the Pentagon. The previous year was $1.4 trillion. Richard Lieberman, who was the accountant for the General Accounting Office, calculated that, in fact, there was $7.3 trillion without a paper trail. How do you lose that kind of money? It is, of course, the infrastructure for the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, for the drug traffic, for the intelligence operations, for the special forces, for the armed assaults and assassinations that unfold across the planet, for the detention camps that are being set up in the United States. And to put that into perspective, $1 trillion is $1,000 a minute since the birth of Jesus. They're cannibalizing the infrastructure of our society. And they are dependent upon a permanent war. The World War IV is a permanent condition of targeting 60 countries, according to Woolsey and Norman Podhoretz in his 82-page article and commentary in 2004. Each country ad seriatim, swept and consumed by terror, has to be cleansed.
Taking aims, Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli master plan for the Middle East. Your applause will be dialing 212-209-2950. This was just a 25-minute excerpt from a speech of Ralph's that's over an hour and 20 minutes. And aside from the hour and 20 minutes of Ralph's presentation, there's another more than half hour to 40 minutes of question and answers. And there's an hour-long presentation of the slideshow, the incredible slideshow of the war in Lebanon, an inside view, documentation of the massacre of Sabra and Shatila in 1982,
well,
and the destruction.
Our eyewitness filming of the unspeakable massacre in Sabra and Shatila. Maya was actually doing the filming. We were there something like 35 minutes after the last wave of slaughter. The militia was still in the camps. The corpses were piled everywhere. We barely knew what we were encountering because we entered the camps by hiding from Israeli patrols in the shells of buildings. And what we filmed is so harrowing and so numbing. We were there 4 days.
And, Ralph, the presentation, what you do in your lecture, Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East, is tied together, linked together, the destruction, the devastation of the daily life, the integrity, the national sovereignty of the Palestinian people from the 1940s through the 1960s, through 1982, up to the invasion of Lebanon last year, tying it together with what you describe with World War IV, as coined by James Woolsey, the permanent war on the people of the United States, called the so-called War on Terror, and you link it with the events of 9/11 and all that in this hour and 20-some-odd minute discussion. Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East. Your $125 contribution to WBAI. And again, I'd like to remind you that the copies are being duplicated as we speak, and those of you who contributed in the last fund drive will have them imminently, and those of you who contribute in this fund drive will get them right away as they're at the duplicator right now. We, again, 212-209-2950, since we're here in California and not in the studio, we may not be able to hear your the phones ringing, so please get on the phone, 212-209-2950. You won't want to miss out on this. Let's discuss why we're bringing up Apocalypse Now again. Given the discussions we've been having about the impending attacks in Iran and also the deepening of the assault in Iraq and what that means, the consequence for Jordan and Syria, Today in the San Francisco Chronicle was an incredible article, and you can read the full article at www.sfgate.com. It's an article by Carolyn Lockhead, L-O-C-H-H-E-A-D, entitled Conflict in Iraq, Iraq Refugee Crisis Exploding, 40% of lead, the crumbling nation. And I'd also be saying that Ralph has a very bad sore throat, as you'll be able to hear, so and a bad cold. So I may be doing more of the talking until next week, when you'll hear much more of Ralph. So the Iraqi refugees now represent 10% of the Jordanian population. Jordan has a population of 6 million, and remember, many of those 6 million people are Palestinian refugees. So think of the consequences of what this war in Iraq has had on Jordan.
Let's put this in some perspective, brothers and sisters. 40% of the middle class has fled Iraq. 2 million refugees. The pre-war population of Iraq was 21 million people. There are 2 million refugees. It's 10% of the population.
1.7 of those are displaced within Iraq.
No, yes. That's an additional 1.7 million people who are displaced inside Iraq. That's why the calculations were that this is roughly the equivalent of 13 to 14 million people in the United States. 50,000 Iraqis are fleeing inside Iraq each month. 5,000 have been displaced since the bombing of the Shia shrine in Samarra. Those are figures as of January 2007.
500,000.
Yes. And the meaning for the Iraq of this occupation and this war is the utter devastation of the entire society, combined with the fact that as the reports were laid out in the British newspaper The Independent on January 7th, the Iraqi regime is going to hand over all reserves of oil to United States energy giants. And the new law, which is, and this is what this escalation in part is about, to secure that the Iraqi regime, the government, the puppet regime, is being directed to turn over their vast oil reserves to United States and British energy conglomerates. So much for this facade and charade of Iraqi sovereignty, of course. The Independent obtained a leaked version of the law. The Iraqi Council of Ministers will approve a new hydrocarbon law that will radically redraw the Iraqi oil industry and open the doors for the third largest oil reserve in the world to be handed over to the United States and British oil companies. It will allow the first large-scale operation of foreign oil companies in the country since the industry was nationalized. Now, bear in mind, brothers and sisters, that when the Iraqi Revolution occurred in 1958, Karim Qasim confined the U.S. oil companies and British oil companies to 0.1% of the territory of Iraq.
That was through concessions, which was the mode then.
And the response of the CIA was to sponsor the assassination of Abdul Karim Qasim. And as I've often cited and documented, their instrument for that operation of murdering the nationalist leader of revolutionary Iraq in 1963 was none other than Saddam Hussein, their man in Baghdad for 27 years.
Again, 212-209-2950. It's the hard-hitting information, the meticulous documentation that you've come to rely on from Taking AIM is available only because of WBAI. We are now in our sixth year broadcasting on WBAI, and we have to thank each and every one of you who've made this possible, who've kept WBAI viable, on the air, broadcasting, and through the Internet, reaching out across the world. 212-209-2950. Today, I had a telephone call from a man from Tucson, Arizona, who uses our the program archive on our website, downloads, tells people here, there, across the country about the Taking AIM program. He relies on it. He could not rely on Taking AIM without WBAI. That's why at these few times during the year, we ask each and every one of you to get on the phone, dial 212-209-2950, and make your contribution to Taking AIM and WBAI, your contribution for through Taking AIM to WBAI.
You know,
again, Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East, two DVD. It has three parts in it. The first part, The War in Lebanon, an inside view, slides you will never have seen anywhere before, believe me. And the hour and 20 minutes lecture by Ralph, the incredible analysis, and again, an extended discussion period. 212-209-2950. Get on the phone. Ralph, you were mentioning these production sharing agreements. That's what the new law is going to implement. And it's outrageous. The actual content of this legislation was drafted by a U.S. consulting firm that had been hired by the Bush administration. And it was presented to the major oil companies and the International Monetary Fund last summer before it was ever shown to Iraqi legislators. And they only recently saw it, and some still haven't seen it. And what a production sharing agreement does in this case, it's a 30-year agreement, so that no matter who is in power as the government, the agreement would stand. And it regulates profits, tax rates, and production levels. And it returns to the foreign companies any funds that they put in as an investment and guarantees them up to 20% of the profit and retaining 60 to 70% of the oil revenue. This is what the true meaning of this current escalation in the destruction of Iraq, the true meaning of the original invasion of Iraq and the invasions that have gone on previously with the first Gulf War.
Well, I want to emphasize something here, brothers and sisters, and please keep the calls coming. Please call in your support for the work of Taking AIM, for WBAI, for Pacifica Radio. Call 212-209-2950. You will recall that much was made of the fact that Rumsfeld resigned and Robert M. Gates replaced him under pressure, it was said, from that wing of the ruling class for which James Baker and Lee Hamilton are spokespersons, and you had the Iraq Study Group and the Democratic Party virtually embracing Robert Gates as the new defense secretary. January 15th, New York Times. Gates states the United States is resolved to remain in the Persian Gulf. Defense Secretary Robert Gates stated Monday that Iran is acting in a very negative way, and the United States will build up its forces to demonstrate its resolve. The Iranians think we're tied down in Iraq, and they have the initiative, Gates stated. We are communicating that we are going to be there for a long time. And the article proceeds to demonstrate that Gates, including all of those who are associated with him, are in knownly tactical divergence with the stratagems of Bush and his neocon surrounding advisors. This is a ruling class stratagem that differs about tactics, brothers and sisters, but the objectives are strategically the same. Devastate the peoples of the area, seize the resources of the planet, permanent war, and an addiction to arms for the capitalist economy that is ever-increasing as an addict needs its fix and in always-increasing doses. That's the reality that is borne out. And when we have those Democrats who fake their support for withdrawal from Iraq, we but look at what they do in practical reality in terms. They don't cut off the funds. They support every key piece of legislation that allows these predations to continue, and they seek to deflect, they seek to co-opt They seek to contain the mass resistance that is building amongst the American people. And that's why BAI, WBAI, taking aim, and the kind of programming that we provide, the data that we demonstrate, that we document and we analyze and that we present, cannot be found in the established media and are so critical for you to support.
And Ralph is not found on any of the other Pacifica stations either. It's only WBAI, and that is why our commitment to WBAI is so sincere and so firm. 212-209-2950. Please get on the phone and dial now. Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East. We're only for 6 o'clock. This is your opportunity, 212-209-2950, and the DVDs will be shipped to you very, very soon.
And, again, it's Apocalypse Now, brothers and sisters. It's the Armageddon plans, the permanent war. It's the escalation on a scale that we have not even begun to anticipate. Here, brothers and sisters, in the Los Angeles Times of January 14th, the war costs have hit historic proportions. The price tag for the Iraq conflict will surpass Vietnam's cost. By the time the Vietnam War ended in 1975, it had become America's longest war, the Los Angeles Times reports, and shadowed the legacies of four presidents. Those costs are going to be exceeded shortly in this year. Indeed, by the time the bill for World War II had passed the $600 billion mark in mid-1943, the United States had driven German forces out of North Africa, devastated the Japanese fleet in the Battle of Midway, and launched the vast offensives that were in Europe and in the South Pacific. And these numbers have been exceeded already in this terrible devastation in Iraq. But the cannibalizing of the infrastructure of our society, the assault upon the gains of working people in the United States, they've only just begun. These costs, as the Los Angeles Times tells us, are hitting historic proportions, and those are the official numbers. We've already done a program, brothers and sisters, to demonstrate that the costs of the war in Iraq have exceeded $2 trillion and are expected to go beyond that. These numbers are an expression of the system that we are suffering from, which is in terminal decay. Apocalypse Now is an overall perspective and documentation of what that is on the ground, what the historical antecedents are. Please, brothers and sisters, get a copy of Apocalypse Now as an expression of support for WBAI.
And also, in order to share it with your friends, your family, your colleagues, to spread the word about this analysis, to have people to broaden their understanding so that our organizing efforts will be deeper and more extensive. I was looking over some of the shows that we've done over the past 5 years. We're now into our sixth year, and it was in May of 2003 that we had the extensive three-hour series, World War IV. We've been discussing this for a long time, and going even further back was why war. We've been analyzing the war in Iraq and the consequences for the American people, whether it's Police State America or Buried Alive, the three-part series that we rebroadcast because it was so timely to discuss what is happening to the those people who are incarcerated, the torture. We talk about, we reveal and we discuss the torture in Abu Ghraib, the torture in Guantanamo, but very rarely is there ever discussion of the torture of people in the prisons across the United States, and that's why we replay Buried Alive, Torture in America. And again, we're discussing here, what are the consequences for people in the United States? When we talk about trillions of dollars of our tax dollars, this money doesn't grow on trees. These are our hard-earned dollars over which we have no say of how this money is spent. When you spend the $2 trillion, more than $2 trillion, on a war machine, that money, again, means there is no money for social services. The attacks on Social Security, the attacks on the education system, the depletion of permanent jobs, the attacks on pensions, all this is related to this war machine.
Well, to clarify this, brothers and sisters, it's not that there isn't money. It's that they use their support for the war machine and for their profits as a pretext. They are crying poverty when it comes to education and housing and health care and a surviving wage. They never have any problem in providing the resources out of our hides for their wars of predation and for their trillions of profit. The last sentence in the Los Angeles Times article I will quote. And that's, again, the Los Angeles Times for January 14th. War costs hit historic proportions. Last sentence. Even if the fighting stopped soon, which few expect, the bills will continue to mount as the Pentagon pushes to restore what the war has cost in troops and material. You understand what they're telling us here? Quite apart from the ever-escalating amount of money they're taking out of our hides, when the war stops, which is no time soon, in fact, if ever, they will double up to replicate the materials that they have already spent money on and to provide for a yet further expansion of the military maw in capitalist America.
212-209-2950. Ralph, that is the primary reason Donald Rumsfeld had opposed an increase of the increase of the numbers of troops. He preferred to spend money on armaments, the direct flow to the capitalist producers. But one of the reasons he was opposed to increased ground troop strength, it wasn't just on an attitude of how you wage war, technology versus troops. It's the when you have troops, you have benefits. There is universal health care for the veterans and the families of the veterans, the live families. And the cost of this universal health coverage is almost half of the military budget. And Donald Rumsfeld has now tried to tax that, where the veterans would have to pay co-pays or they would have less coverage. And if you have more soldiers, you have more benefits. Again, this ties into the destruction of the living standards of people in the United States.
Well, it's a rationale for their politics of always cutting back on the money that is allocated to their cannon fodder, to their exploited workers, to the poor who are designed to fight their wars for the profits of the few. But the realities are that the health care benefits are a small fraction. They give these statistical numbers, but the official figures for the cost of their military outlay are always a fraction of the real numbers. They are expending multiples more, as that documented report that we produced showed them. The number $2 trillion, which is a conservative number for the cost of the war in Iraq, conservative because it's based upon the assumption that the cost of oil had gone up $5 a barrel, and in fact, since that war was started, the cost of oil has gone up closer to $35 to $40 a barrel, which indicates the magnitude of the actual outlay of the hard-earned labor-producing value that goes to the military maw. The official statistics are the tip of the iceberg. They are cannibalizing the infrastructure of our society, brothers and sisters. We're not going to be able to stop these people by wishing for them to stop or by thinking we can contain them. We are going to have to mobilize a movement of the many. We're going to have to stop work at the point of production. We're going to have to mobilize our workforce, our working class, our trade union movement to take on the ruling class. Apocalypse Now is about necessity for that struggle. Please support it. Support WBAI, brothers and sisters.
Your $125 contribution for Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East, 212-209-2950. And we'll be with you next week. Remember, next week we come on at 4 o'clock on East Coast time, and we'll be on from 4 to 6. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. 212-209-2950. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net and visit our website, www.takingaimradio.com.